Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me,
Aaron,
and Casey.
We are all graduates of Willits High School. Today our topic is college debt and stress. As the cost of attending college has soared in the past two decades, many students find themselves taking out student loans. 37 million Americans have college debts to pay off, with the median balance owed being around $12,800. 10 million Americans owe more than $25,000 each. Altogether, Americans owe nearly $1 trillion because they attended college. Total student loan debt is 20% more than all credit card debt and 15% more than all auto loans.
The cost of college in the United States rose sharply for the 2011-2012 school year, continuing a multi-year pattern in which public school increases outpaced private school hikes and both eclipsed the average rate of inflation by significant amounts. The California State University and College System raised in-state fees by 21% at the four-year colleges and 37% for the two-year colleges. In the rest of the United States, fees for public colleges rose 7%. In France, college tuition is paid for by the government, while certain costs such as living expenses and books are generally paid by the students or their parents. A university education is seen as a right for anyone capable and so inclined. In Germany, public universities have tuition ranging from free to 500 euros per semester. Public universities in Denmark, Finland, and Sweden are all fully state-funded, though students may have to pay small fees, such as student union membership. Other major nations on the continent have tuition-free, state-funded universities as well, to varying degrees. In an era of persistently high unemployment, family incomes that fail to keep up with inflation, savings that have been eroded by declining stock market values, and rising college prices, the majority of students in the United States completing a bachelor's degree have taken on student loans. Student loans are easy to get, and most students believe that they will be easy to pay back with the higher-paying jobs they will get because of their degrees.
In Mendocino County, there are many people who owe money on student loans. Some are still attending college, some went to college a few years ago, some several decades ago. And once they stop attending college, they are all paying interest to banks for the apparent privilege of furthering their education. Many of them never saw an increased earning capacity because of their college degrees. Most of them are grateful that they attended college. All of them helped bail out the banks in the past few years. College loans are special. Even if a person loses everything and files for bankruptcy, the college loans are never forgiven. A student debt strike campaign surfaced within the first few months of the Occupy movement's swell, but gained only moderate traction and did not lead into a collective act of default. In Congress, Hanson Clark has proposed a Student Loan Forgiveness Act. Over 1 million people have signed on in support of this bill, H.R. 4170. Borrowers would not have to make monthly payments greater than 10% of their discretionary income, could have debt forgiven after 5 years of participation in the Federal Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, and more. There is a debate in Congress to freeze the interest rate at 3.4% for another year rather than double it as it was proposed.
One thing that is clear from these facts is that many college graduates and students are stressed by debt. Everyone listening to the show knows someone who is struggling financially because they took student loans and have 5, 10, or 20 years of irrevocable indebtedness for their education. Students who are currently accumulating debt need to consider whether classes that will never earn any financial return are worth taking. Will studies in humanities and creative arts become something only the children of the wealthy can explore? First-year college students rate their emotional health at record low levels according to a survey conducted by UCLA. Stress was found to be at a new high due largely in part to worries over money and future debt. Three-fourths of college students see increased earning power as their most important reason for attending college. And with unemployment increasing in most fields, many question whether a degree chosen for economic reasons will pay off in terms of a career.
What we want to discuss today is college debt and stress, stress and debt. In high school, most students are directed toward attending college, and more than 50% of the students who do enter college will be taking loans out to make it possible, which means starting off adulted in debt, a unique debt that can never be revoked. In contrast, most countries in Europe offer free or very low-cost higher education, because their societies believe everyone gains by extending the intelligence of the population.
We will talk about college, debt, and stress for about 40 minutes. Then we will open up the phone lines for your ideas, experiences, and insights. We are in the Willis studio, and our phone number will be 707-456-9991. Let's begin by discussing our educational plans and how we are going to achieve them. Casey?
All right. So Aron and I are the class of 2012 from the Willits High School, and we both just graduated. I personally plan on attending UC Berkeley, and I will be going there this fall. And I plan to study economics, and I wish to go into politics. I'm not entirely sure what my plans are yet, but I know I want to go into the economic field, and my current plan is to probably become a politician, and probably my goal would be a senator, but we'll see if I ever make it there. I'll definitely try.
My name is Aron, and as Casey mentioned, we're both graduates of 2012 at Willits High School. I will be attending the University of Santa Cruz in the fall, and my plans are in double majoring in music, which is in the form of one of the arts, for personal reasons and enjoyment, and economics and business, you know, possibly pursuing one of the careers in businesses or maybe starting my own business.
I'm Eric, and I am a Willits High graduate of 2011. Currently, I'm going to Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio. Now, what I'm actually studying currently is sociology with a minor in theology. So, in studying that, it's more of a self-serving study. It's basically something that I'm interested in. As far as where I'm going with it, I'm not very certain, but I strongly believe that going to college doesn't necessarily have to be for any specific purpose other than why you want to be there, to whether it be to study or to make up, you know, like we said, the money that you spent in getting to college and taking out the loans and paying them back, etc.
All right, so let's talk about our finances for college. I am going to be able to have my parents to pay for a lot of it. I definitely thank them for that. It's going to be great that my parents are going to help pay for college, especially because UC Berkeley is one expensive college. Unfortunately, though, they can't pay for everything, and I think we're estimating that I'm going to have about $100,000 in debt at the end of all this, and my parents, it may not be quite that much. That may have been an overestimate, but my parents will be co-signing that loan. However, I will be expected to pay it off as much as I can.
I will be receiving enough funds to pay for, three-quarters of my own education from both the college and the federal government. So I will be responsible for about $20,000, which I will be planning on paying off by working during the summers and or getting a part-time job while attending University of Santa Cruz.
The federal aid that I've received has basically been only loans. The bulk of my scholarship money and how I'm paying for the college is actually scholarships given by the school itself. So it's very odd, considering I do dive there, but the scholarships are not athletic scholarships, although, they wanted me there to dive, but it really was a generous give on their part, and I'm happy to accept it.
Now, one thing is student loans are something we really want to talk about. I'm not actually going to be getting traditional student loans because my family looked at it and they actually weren't the great deal for us. I'm not entirely sure what my parents are planning on in the form of loans, but it's not the traditional student loan. And one thing to look at, which I really think is kind of a bad system, is there is a law passed here in America that made it so student loans cannot be revoked. What that means is when somebody files for bankruptcy, they get all their debt wiped clean, except for federal student loans. So that means no matter in how bad a financial shape you are, you can lose your house, you can lose your car, you can lose just about everything you own, and you will still have to be paying your student loans.
Where that comes across to me is, I think we discussed this in our introduction too, Student loans make up a very large percentage of the money that the government is receiving. Now, consider that, you know, even if your student debt in particular may not be a lot, or maybe it is, you count all of that money of the college graduates, add that together, and that's a very large percentage of money. And if the federal government is paying off other countries for other debts, how bad would it be if they could just write them all off because of bankruptcies? Now, obviously not everyone who has college loan debts to the government is going to go bankrupt, but it would soon set the precedent. And once the precedent is set that you don't have to pay off your student loans because of one sob story, then suddenly everyone is going to refuse to pay them.
Well, at the same time, you could mention that for the banks. I mean, a couple of years ago, you saw the fall of AIG and, you know, the bailouts and all those things which the American public paid for. I mean, they owe trillions, billions of dollars, and they're getting to just basically get that written off. So why can't we help the average American person, you know, by helping them pay their own debt off, which they're just using to educate themselves and, you know, raise the average, not necessarily intelligence, but education level in the United States?
Well, one thing I see as kind of wrong is in the bailout, it wasn't necessarily loans to these banks. It was just flat-out giveaways, and on top of those flat-out giveaways, there were no requirements of the banks. Like, there are very few things in form of regulations to prevent the thing from happening again. So I guess the question you can ask is, if banks are now being called people and all these corporations are now being called people, then shouldn't people get as nice of treatment?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think it really is a difficult issue, and I personally feel that we should really work on lowering the cost for higher education. As we've mentioned, in Europe and a lot of other countries, it is just about free or very low cost to go to higher universities. And I've talked to people from other countries, and oftentimes it's kind of surprising to them and confusing to them for me to explain our system in which we have to pay all this money to go to higher education.
Well, I think it's because of the different mindset between the European people and the American people. I mean, we discussed how universally in Europe it's more accepted that by offering free education, it'll raise the average education level of the country as a whole and therefore benefit everyone. I mean, you have more technology being developed with more architects, things like that, which as a whole will raise the condition of the you know, the nation. Whereas in the United States, it's more thought of being, you know, you work for your own things, you pay for your own things, and, you know, you get paid for a service, and kind of things like that. And we're being more driven towards achievement and all these things instead of helping one another, which would be, you know, the feeling of Europe compared to our own feelings towards each
our
other.
Own American paradigm, right. Now what you're saying though is I think you know, not everyone in Europe, and this is, you know, this is especially for America, not everyone in Europe who gets a college degree in anything, you know, whether it be architecture or any of the other things you mentioned, not all of them are going to get a job. You know, it happens. You go to college and you don't get a job. And there's also a wide variety of the kinds of jobs that you can get. There's manual labor jobs that require no college degree, obviously. And then there's tech degrees and other things like that that do require degrees. Now, in America, it seems to be – it doesn't seem to be. It is the case, in fact, that we're losing the kinds of jobs that do not require college degrees. Those have moved overseas just because labor is cheaper over there. Now – especially in California with the jobs, you know, around Silicon Valley that, you know, are like technological jobs where you do need college degrees, those are becoming more and more slim as far as job openings are concerned. It's harder to get those jobs. And when everyone suddenly, you know, goes to the college saying, well, those are the only jobs left in America, I want that job, of course, you know, the colleges are going to raise tuition. You know, we were talking to Aaron's brother the other day, and he was talking about how supply and demand of college has basically risen because as there's more demand for it, of course, they're going to raise the price.
Well, I think that is also due to the fact that manual labor is looked down upon, honestly. I mean, everyone praises people who go to college and, you know, assume that if you went to college, you're more intelligent or, you know, more elite than someone who didn't go to college, which isn't necessarily true. And in that perspective, are you going to college because you want to be considered elite for that, you know, public recognition, or simply because you want to educate yourself and have a better understanding of the world? And also, as we mentioned, jobs. Is that why we're going to college, or are we going because we want to learn something simply because of our own personal desire to expand our horizons?
Right. I honestly don't think that a lot of people, like some people may say, well, yeah, I enjoy college because I get to learn. But I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily go to college specifically because they want to learn. I'm not saying that those people aren't out there. They certainly are. But a lot of people kind of have the blinders on. They just kind of follow as a herd of sheep would.
Well, to look back at Europe again, we've been talking about right now is how some people who don't necessarily need to go to college for their plans in life are still going because they've been conditioned to. Germany has a much different system, and I know my Spanish teacher from back in freshman year at Wilts High School, Mr. Southwick, who's retired now, but he lived in Germany for a while, and he would talk about it a lot, and he really liked the education system there. And what he told me was that in their high schools, rather than telling everybody, well, you need to take these classes and all these things to prepare you for college, and then after that you're going to college, and then after that you're getting your job, whatever it is, what they would do in German high schools is they would talk to the kids and they would figure out what the kids are interested in. And if there's a kid who is interested in being a mechanic or a similar skill like that, they would give him kind of a trade school experience in high school. They wouldn't be preparing him to go off to learn humanities or something like that, which are great for some people, but not great for all. What would happen was he would take auto classes, he would take all kinds of classes important for a mechanic, and then when he got out of high school, he was just about ready to become a mechanic. He didn't need to spend money and time in a college education he might not be interested in. He could go straight into the job he was looking for and become an apprentice, and then following that, become a mechanic himself.
That reminds me of an anthropologist that I believe she went to Indonesia or some surrounding area, and she did some studies on some of the children there and looked at some of the stress levels. Now, they had very low stress levels compared to people in America, and basically what she had theorized is that they have less stress in their lives because, A, they have more control over their lives, and B, because life is simpler for them. Things are essentially more figured out for them. And in a world like America, and it really is another world of America, there's so many choices that people have to make, and they have to make them on their own. And, you know, like you described with your Spanish teacher in Germany, they help you find, as it sounds, they help you find what it is that you're interested in so that you don't necessarily have that stress. And it's not necessarily choosing something for you from your interpretation of his experience, but it was more, I guess, helping you find what it is that you're good at and what you're interested in life.
Well, yeah, they're kind of presenting the opportunities to you. But one thing like to talk about is maybe stress does have a simpler life, but we have to understand not everybody wants that kind of life. There's a lot of different types of people in the world, and there's a lot of different things they'd like to do, and something that I think America could do very well at, and we actually do, I think, do okay as we are now, is allowing all these different kinds of people to find their own way in life. And I think kind of the really heavy emphasis on college isn't so great for that, because if you tell everybody they need to go to college, not everybody is the same, and some of them won't want that, and some of them won't need that.
Well, just recently, we were fishing out at a pond with his 9-year-old boy, and, you know, we kind of thought, you know, we should ask him what he's thinking about doing for his own future. You know, he's starting to kind of look at things a bit differently, and the kid's just an exceptional fisherman. He caught like 23 fish in the entire day. And we're sitting out there trying to catch a fish, and we can't catch anything. And we ask him, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" You know, and most kids would say, "You know, I want to be famous. I want to be rich, an astronaut." But the kid responds, "I want to be a fisherman." And you know, he was a really mature kind of kid. He could talk with us, and he could be straight with us. He could teach us things. It was really quite interesting, and that just kind of got me thinking. You know, if everyone was like this, we'd all do something we enjoyed and could be applicable to life without thinking that we have to go to college in order to have a career. I mean, if he has, this talent for fishing and he wants to do that, you know, it just kind of surprised me that a kid at the age of 9 would right away say that that's what he wanted to do for the rest of his life.
And be realistic in wanting to do that, because, I mean, he was a good fisherman. I could see him someday being on TV for, like, pro bass fishers or something. But another thing is something that used to happen a lot, not nearly anymore, before my time, is people would go to college because they wanted to learn things, not necessarily because they wanted to make money off those things, but because they wanted to understand the world. They wanted to know more about the world. And partially because of our thoughts in America, our culture, and also because of the prices in college, is we see college as nothing but an economic adventure, something you have to do to make money later. And I think that is an important thing, is using college to make more money in your life, if that's what you want in your life. But another thing you have to consider is, well, you can go to college to learn, just to learn. And I plan to take several minors and possibly majors in things like psychology, sociology, and philosophy, solely for my own personal sake. And Aron, I think you said you were thinking of taking music just for your own personal gain?
Yes, simply to understand why it works, how it functions. That's one of the things that I really enjoy is music, and I'd like to be able to, you know, maybe compose. That's one thing that I would love doing if I could do that as a living. And, you know, by educating myself in that, that'd be a job, you know, I might not make it, but, you know, we're going to try.
Yeah, so I think we can see college is also a form of enjoyment, and a form of enjoyment outside of joining a fraternity and getting drunk, which I don't think helps much.
Well, you mentioned, you know, this is meant to talk about stress. You know, why are freshmen the most stressed out students, or why has it been that they have lower, you know, higher anxiety and lower self-esteem issue? You know, why? Like, what do you guys think, Casey?
Well, one thing I think Eric would probably be the best one to hear on this, because he's the only one actually in college right now, so I'll try and keep it short. But my guess would be is they haven't had things figured out yet. I mean, I know I haven't. I mean, I've got my ideas and I've got my plans, but I'm still pretty far from having any specific plans, any specific ideas. I just kind of have a general goal, and it is kind of nerve-wracking and frustrating and kind of scary to go off into the world and just not quite have it all worked out yet.
Well, here's the thing, is that first of all, college isn't the real world. You know, college is an entry to the real world, you know, and I think, and that this sort of ties into what you were saying, but, you know, people going to college, they don't really know what they want to do a lot of times because they go into it for a reason that I think a lot of people almost do anything, you know, go on like adventures. It's a certain culture in America that if you can go do something, then you have to go and do it. We're surrounded in modernity, and America is a complete believer in modernity. Everything has to be new. Everything has to be up to date. And considering that it's kind of like this new thing that everyone's going to college, which are probably, you know, originally did start for reasons that were, you know, self-benefiting, such as getting economic gain and everything, I think a lot of it has to do with, like I said, just because everyone else is doing it, you know, because it's available, people have to go. And really resulting, you see a lot of people that go to college and they just want to party. I mean, it really is like that. People just go because everyone else goes and they want to have a good time. And everyone hears about college being a good time. And some people just ditch classes and do all sorts of other things, you know. College is nothing other than what you want to get out of it. College is what you make of it. College is why you want to go there. And, you know, I think that's not necessarily just something to be said about college, but in life in general. And I think that college ends up being a lot more stressful because of debt and everything else anyways, because people think that there has to be one specific given purpose and that they have to have a plan, you know. And going into college, everyone says, oh, I want to do this and I want to do that. I'll even admit that going into college, I thought I had a specific plan. I thought I knew exactly what I was going to do. And turns out when I got into college, my mind completely changed. I was totally against what I wanted to do, and it wouldn't have worked out in my the way I believe and everything else. And I think that happens to a lot of college students, you know. And in a way, once you do figure that out, I think that in itself kind of reduces stress because you feel like you have more power over your life. You have more ability to control the way that things are going in your life.
So you think freshmen might be a little stressed out because they're finding that maybe their goals that they did have aren't so realistic or aren't such a good idea?
I think so. But at the same time, you have to realize that we are the Google generation. We are children of overstimulation and everything coming to us has to be done and has to be manipulated and seen and touched and felt and everything else. So the experience of going to college itself extremely plays into that. Because you go to college and you're overstimulated with all of this new technology that you're seeing being developed, with all of this new information that seems to have been like underground for years, and like, why haven't I ever heard of this? Why have I never heard this perspective? And everything is just so mind-blowing. Even the social aspect of meeting people and everything else, it's so overstimulating that you can't help but love it. But at the same time, all that overstimulation is sort of what helps you to, I guess, let go of your previous plans. You know, it's a different perspective, you know, and like I say, it's really not the real world, you know, so it changes your perspective of the world. But at the same time, you have to realize that once you do go out into the real world, everything is going to become, I guess, more relative than it would be in college. College is the world conceptualized. The real world is the world put into action. You know, to talk about the world is a lot different than to actually experience the world, because it's never going to be exactly how it's explained.
Well, I think as an incoming freshman, a big thing is going to be an entire change of lifestyle. I mean, we're sitting here and we're still with our parents, and now we're going to go off, you know, hundreds of miles away from them, and we're going to have to do everything ourselves. We're going to be managing our own time. We're going to be deciding if we want to go to class, if at all. And, you know, you have to manage your own hours. Before, your mom says, you know, dinner at 5, you know, you'll have your breakfast ready, and then she's going to take you to school. And now you're doing that yourself. You're away from your parents. You're doing your own laundry. It's a completely different world. You know, it's not real life, but it's a step up. You're getting closer. And everything is changing, and we're making our own decisions for ourselves.
You're liberated.
This huge basically. Amount of power, but at the same time, a lot of responsibility. You know, and that's one of the biggest things that we're going to be seeing, me and Casey, is, you know, this complete change of our worlds, and we're going to see our minds change.
So, yeah, I kind of get what you guys are saying. That's sort of like a transition into real life. And I'm kind of looking forward to that, because I know I'm not ready for real life, so I need that transition for myself, and I'm hoping that transition will help me. But I think we've strayed a little off topic, and let's try and get back to college finances, the finance end of college. And one thing is, I'm kind of in support of switching to a more European form of higher education, which is, and I know a lot of people consider it a dirty word, and let's not try and keep it a dirty word, but a socialist education system. Now, what kind of the concept is that rather than each individual paying for their college, as a society as a whole, we pay for everybody to go to college. And the obvious implication is the rich are going to have to pay for it more. And I was wondering what you guys think of the concept of kind of getting closer, perhaps not entirely, but to a closer form of socialist higher education.
I would have to agree with that. I mean, personally, I think that, you know, one of the things that I've seen and noticed a lot is, you know, middle-class people who aren't minorities, you know, Caucasians, that can't get the financial aid simply because their income range falls right in the middle of, you know, not being able to get any financial aid and yet making too much money to actually be able to afford. They're just, you know, just being able to hold on. And that's one of the things that they are not going to get to go to college simply because they make just enough money to get over that line, but they don't have enough money to pay for their own education. You know, being a minority, I'm a Mexican American. You know, one of the things that I will receive is a bit more financial aid. But one of the things that I do look at is, you know, in general, everyone wants to receive something for free, but no one wants to give anything up. I read an article, or we saw something in leadership class last year. By 60 Minutes, it was why Sweden is the happiest nation in the world. And one of the things was that they have, as we already mentioned, a socialized education system. However, they pay 50% of their total income for taxes, but they receive free education. And in general, you know, if a student wants to attend college, they can attend college at no cost. And in general, their entire population is happier because they have lower expectations of themselves. So therefore, if they have lower expectations, they don't feel that anxiety of failure, you know, creeping on them. So they're, you know, a lot happier as a population as a whole.
Well, what you did mention is taxes, and I think that's an obvious consideration because everybody can go out there and say, well, let's all have free education. Woohoo, free education. But the thing you have to consider is that we're going to have higher taxes as a result. Unless, of course, we all want to borrow from China, and I don't think we all want to do that. So, but let's look at taxes, and I feel I'm going to try and not get too off topic here, but I feel we kind of had a really bad kind of opinion of taxes in this country. People are convinced that the IRS is a boogeyman who comes at night to take all your money and steal it away. But really what taxes are is paying for a service. You give the government money, and in return, the government gives you a service. The one difference from, say, paying for your house or buying capitalists in a system that's capitalist, a free market system, is that when you're buying something from the government, it's a mandatory payment, and what you get is controlled by your vote rather than your money. So, really, I think we frown way too much on taxes. I don't think it would hurt this country to tax ourselves a little more in order to have a better education. I feel that would definitely improve the country, and a lot of European countries believe that, and I think it's worked for them.
Well, here's the thing with taxes. When you set up a new tax to pay for something, you have to be under the assumption that it's one, needed, and two, actually wanted. So it needs to be something that what I'm saying is the majority of Americans are in favor for. Now, obviously, that is the purpose of the voting. Now, with the one benefit of taxing is that it's a better use of money. People are fiscally irresponsible. It's a well-known fact, and it's been well-known for a long time. Putting fiscal responsibility in the government's hands is saying, well, I think that they're going to be able to make it easier to pay for these sorts of things that obviously the majority of Americans voted for.
Well, I think that's kind of a really sticky topic. You have to be really careful there because though many Americans may be fiscally irresponsible, it is kind of touchy whether or not we should simply lift that responsibility and take some control away from them. But one thing I think we can consider about a tax system is, and I mentioned this earlier, is the wealthier group would most likely be paying more. Now, the idea is if we had a tax system where the wealthier were not paying more for education, then it would be no different than the current system we have now where everybody pays a lot for their college. But I think that's okay to have a system where the wealthier pay more for the education of the entire society. And one thing is, A, because they can afford it. I think one thing we have to consider with taxes that are heavier on the wealthy is the fact that the wealthy can afford it and that it's more economically viable than an ordinary system. Really, and also I think the other question is fairness. Is it really fair to tax the rich more simply because they can afford it? And I think so. And one thing to consider is this country used to have higher taxes, and it used to have a government that paid for more services. Now, the issue is, a lot of these wealthy people got their money from their parents, or they made the money themselves, but a lot of them were grown up on these systems that survived on much higher taxes. So I think, yeah, it's fair to tax them more if they benefited from the very systems that were taxing the rich of their time more.
You have to understand that some of these people also were born into it. They don't necessarily have a choice. And at the same time, I don't want to say, well, we should punish them by taxing them more simply because of that. Now, I'm not trying to take a conservative or Republican base at all, but I do think that it's, wrong to, I'm not going to say demoralize because I don't necessarily believe that it's doing that, but like I said, punish them for it. I think what would be more fair in a way is just to say that it should be, I guess, on a percentage base.
Well, I wouldn't call it a punishment. I don't think that's the right word to use. I'm not saying they should be punished because they're rich. I think they should simply give back for all that they've been able to have.
And you think that should be forced instead of letting it be their choice?
Well, I don't think they'll choose to. I think we've seen a lot of wealthy people who aren't giving back too much to the society, and they'll quote their charities, but in effect, they're keeping vast millions. And one thing you'll notice is that they've got pretty low income tax, really low income tax.
Definitely.
And one thing is they can afford to pay tax specialists to go through their taxes when the middle class and lower class can't. And the result of that is they find the loopholes. They're the ones who find all the loopholes. They find all the special deals, and they get a tax percentage even lower than right. what's on the usual papers.
Right. No, I definitely agree. I just think that one thing that should be considered, though, too, is perspective. It's easy to sit here, us being, you know, middle-class Americans, and say, well, I think that the rich should pay more because they just have so much of it laying around. Why can't they just give some? You know, but if from another perspective, you know, of someone who was just born into it, you know, and they're just enjoying, you know, things the way that they've always been, they have that entitlement, you know, they have an entitlement to it. And what is their incentive to rid themselves of something that's been entitled to them for their entire life? Absolutely nothing. You know, life is good for them. They don't necessarily see the bad part of life. And as much as we can sit here and say, well, it's fair to do that, it just won't happen because, you know, whether we think it's moral, right, or wrong, or whatever, it would make them less happy. And though it would make us more happy, it would be a majority against a minority that does have a lot of power. And whether or not that's actually going to happen, I don't necessarily see it as completely right either, just because whether, you know, it's moral or however you see it, they don't want it to happen. And you have to consider their perspective in that decision.
I see it more of a social responsibility. I mean, you've seen Warren Buffett, and he's, you know, publicly gone and called the other, you know, rich people to give some of their wealth. I mean, if they have so much money, Casey's mentioned it, they can afford it. They have millions and millions, billions of dollars that they could just, you know, they could afford to give $1 million to the government. Why not? If they have $100 million, $1 million is going to be a small percentage of their total fortune. And why not? You know, we mentioned social responsibility, and this thing, you know, I believe in social responsibility, that you want to give back to something that's given to you. As, you know, a taxpayer, you know, everyone is expected to, you know, pay for the roads. Everyone wants better roads. Everyone wants a better school, but no one wants to pay for more. Everyone wants more for free. You have to be able to give something back in order to receive.
Now, to get kind of back more to education, let's ask the question, is it really helpful to put all our tax dollars into increasing education, to helping fix our education system? And I think one thing to consider is in higher education we're doing pretty well, but definitely not in lower education. Now, that's of course off topic, so I'll try and keep away from there. But one thing I think we should talk about is it's not necessarily politically viable for a lot of politicians to fight for education. Because if you consider the fact that, for example, our president only has 2 terms, that's not much time to see the benefits of education. I mean, because of our system, and it's not necessarily a fault of our system, it's important that we have limits on terms, but the issue is, if a politician tries to sell a long-term fix to the public, such as education, he's going to be out of office before we see the benefits of that fix. So what happens is he says, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get any credit for it because things are going to be better 10, 15 years down the line. I won't even be here in office anymore. So we end up with a public that's crying for short-term fixes and a politicians that are scrambling to impossibly deliver them. I think something we have to consider is maybe we have to look at the long-term fix, and maybe our politicians have to try and give us the long-term fix, even if the benefits are so far down the road.
Yes, and those I agree that would be the right thing to do, the morally correct thing to do, if you will. But you know, like I said, I'm going to go back to perspective and incentive. You know, those sorts of things aren't going to happen. And you know, whether or not this is a rather pessimistic view of it, I suppose. But the sorts of plans and ideas that people need to come up with is something that's not necessarily going to make everybody happy, but basically going to come to a common conclusion about something at least. You know, the upper class of people that do or don't want to pay for the education of the lower class people. You know, like I say, they have that entitlement. They can go to college and send their kids to college whenever they want. The system is basically set up so that those kinds of people can go to college very easily. It's hard for them to see that people in lower classes, middle and low class, have a harder time getting to college in getting their education simply because they just don't have the money. You know, they say, oh, well, there's loans and all those other sorts of things. They can just do well in high school and get enough scholarships and be able to pay it off and work their way up. It all depends on how hard you work. Well, that's completely untrue. You know, there's legacies and all sorts of other things that, that can get you into good colleges and get you very good degrees based on things that are, you know, not based on hard work. And that's how a lot of wealthy people do get into college.
Well, one of the things that I, you know, I've been looking at is, you know, this entire debt is put upon the students' backs. And Clark recently, one of the politicians who was actually going to make an attempt for, a fix for the students. And I haven't really heard of this bill until recently where someone, Dan gave it to us and I was looking at it. And, you know, you're going to argue that, you know, it's going to set a precedence for everyone to just let go of their loans. But I think that, you know, if every person in the United States would take a little bit higher taxes in order to pay off these debts, it would overall be a lot better for everyone in general.
Now, what this loan is to help forgive student loans, and I believe it's to help fix the issue that student loans are also irrevocable for bankruptcies. I think that's an important thing to consider is it really doesn't make any sense to me why a student loan shouldn't be removed with a bankruptcy. And I bet there's somebody out there who can explain that to us, and I'd be happy to hear a call-in who knows more on the subject, and we will be going to that soon. And, I mean, one thing to think about is bankruptcy is a really rough thing. Nobody wants to go through bankruptcy. You lose just about everything when you declare bankruptcy. So it really isn't something where you'd set a precedent of just ditching your student loans at no cost. Bankruptcy is pretty rough, and it really seems strange to me to tell these people who spent all this money on their education and then perhaps found out that it couldn't help them too much, and then just make them keep paying even after they've lost everything. I mean, how can you expect people to pay for so much money? I mean, we mentioned some averages earlier. It's a lot of money that college puts you in debt for, and how can you expect somebody to pay for that after they've lost so much in a bankruptcy?
Well, here's the thing, too. You have to consider why the government would want you to pay so much. It's all, again, based on incentive. They have other things in mind. They have in mind what's going to get them money and what's going to basically get them reelected. And a lot of politicians, almost all politicians, know that to get the voting population, you don't go straight to the youth. The youth is very powerful as far as like an actual believing force and having faith in all sorts of things. I can attest to that. But what they don't do is they don't tend to vote. And they know that. They know that they're not going to get into office by appealing to the youth.
Well, one thing that we must take into perspective is, I mean, the youth of today is going to be building tomorrow. And that's one of the things that we've, you know, I think we fail to understand and really commit to. You know, we've really seen Social Security is going down the drain. You know, we don't have enough people paying back into it. We don't have enough money to keep that going. So by the time we're actually going to be able to get Social Security, we're not going to get anything. It's going to be gone by then. And I think that's one of the things that would be an incentive for them to, you know, want to give us a little bit of a break and get us educated so we can make the money that's going to be supporting the, you know, the Social Security for the next couple of years.
Right. But, you know, people as a whole, we're very procrastinating creatures. You know, we don't think ahead. We all want a short-term fix, not just because it's easier, but also just the system is set up to work that way. Like Casey said, politicians have terms. They have term limits. And everyone wants to, I guess, basically be famous by certain means. And everyone wants to have a certain reason for being famous or for doing something good for the government and doing a good quick fix, you know, like such as Obama's campaign of hope and change. Whether or not that's actually happened, that's the idea of what politicians attempt to do. So we're going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call, and we'd especially like the youth in the listening audience to call in. Please call if you have questions or insights about college stress and the path our society is taking with education.
If you or your children took out loans to get through college, have you been able to make the payments without stress? When you took out the loans, did you realize what you were getting into? And has your college degree made it possible to have a higher standard of living?
What is the value of college besides the possibility of making more money? Should public education be free? If college should cost to attend rather than be subsidized by taxes, why not charge for high school as is done in many developing nations? Should only the wealthy expect to attend college?
What causes stress in college? Do you know of techniques for relieving stress that would be helpful for college students? Is it right for young people to enter adulthood with debt that might take a decade or two to pay off? Would you support the Student Loan Forgiveness Act? Have you signed the petition?
Now the phone number is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number once again is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of the discussion on college debt and stress. We'd really like to hear from you.
So, back to, paying for college. One question is, why is it that high school is free? Why is it that the government considers high school so useful, yet it hardly prepares you for real life, but it's free? It's a given by the government.
I don't understand why, we were mentioning Germany and having specialized, you push the students towards something they're interested in. And coming out of high school, I'm not really prepared for life at all. I mean, we've been taught calculus and algebra and all these things, but how's that really going to help us? You know, I was expecting economics to be something about paying off our bills and things like that. And, I enjoyed economics, learning about, the country and how the government functions and, the economy and things like that. But I really would have liked to have taken a class that maybe showed me how to do my taxes, how to do something like that, or how to make a mortgage payment, phone bills, things like that. That's something that's really useful and applicable. We don't have a home economics class at the high school anymore, at least I don't think.
We have a personal finance class, which I took. And unfortunately, it's just one semester, so it is a helpful class, but it can't teach you everything, that's for sure. And what it really focused on is probably, admittedly, one of the most important things, but not one of the general skills thing, is teaching kids that getting into large amounts of debt that they can't get out of is a bad idea. It was a lot on how to avoid getting into a credit card debt that you can't afford, how not to get car payments you can't afford, and things such as that.
Basically, balancing a checkbook, something functional to everyday life.
Well, home economics, I think, isn't that cooking and things like that?
Oh, correct? I see.
I just thought cooking different dishes. I mean, we're all going to college, and are we going to be making?
So you mean like ramen? General practical skills?
Yeah, practical skills, things like that. How to fix your car. Some, automotive would be something really useful. Carpentry. I mean, we're going to be. Those are the kind of things that are really going to prepare you for life. And all of those could be a segue into, for example, a little bit of mechanics would help you get a job as a mechanic somewhere. Electricity. Become an electrician, which is a lot of, it's in demand. A lot of people, we talked to someone recently who said, there's no one who can fix lawnmowers. Simple motors like that, it would seem that someone with a college education should be able to fix. But, no one really quite has those skills.
And now one thing is, those are usually the first classes cut, is when the government's running out of money. That's the first stuff they cut. Like, I remember our high school is pretty proud of the fact that we have a woodshop class. Not many high schools have woodshop classes left. And I'm not sure we have a metalworking class, do we?
No, we do not.
No metalworks class? I know there used to be, and there may or may not still be an automotives class. I know there was a pretty big one in the past, and they still have the buildings out there set up for an automotives class.
Yeah, we do, however, have welding, which is, definitely something that is applicable. But one of the things is just how, this is just an average town. We don't have the best funding in the whole state. Private colleges high schools could probably afford to do things like that a bit more interesting, but why can't the average high school have something that's actually applicable to real life?
Well, I think another thing, though, too, is, obviously if things are very hard for college or people going into college or, just really the economy in general, one could say, why is it that everyone is going through the same process? Why is everybody learning the same standards of education? Why aren't we teaching things differently in different places to see what works and what doesn't? Other than just making America one big giant experiment and see, well, if it goes wrong, it goes wrong. If it goes right, it goes right. I think something that should be taught is critical thinking in high school. Everyone really learns it to an extent in college, but basically you need to learn to think for yourself. You can't just learn to take every bit of knowledge at face value and say, well, because it was taught to me in school, it must be 100% true. You have to understand that those books that you're reading were written from people who had specific perspectives and specific incentives to make those sorts of things and write it exactly how they wrote it.
Now, I think a critical thinking class is really important. And really, kind of what it does is it gives you the ability to personally check up on things you hear. When you hear something, if you have a critical thinking ability, you can analyze it, you can look at it, you can see if it's reasonable. Now, the phone lines are pretty quiet. We'd love to hear from you guys, and that phone number, once again, is 456-9991. And if you call in, please don't forget to turn off your radio or turn it down.
So, let's talk about why you chose to go to college. What did you guys choose to go to college, Eric?
What did I choose?
Yes.
You know, it was actually a very strange decision. I mean, personally, I'm not going to say that I was ever against it. I was always kind of for college because I always knew that it was going to be a different experience and something that I would enjoy doing, essentially. Now, the reason that I would ever be against it, per se, is just because it's something that everybody else does. And if, you know, if there's many ways to go wrong in modern America, and a lot of those ways seem to be based in economic problems, such as going to college and having to pay off debts and such things. So going to college really was a strange decision for me. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, do we still have you?
Norway. This is a relative. This is the first and only time I've been there.
I'm sorry.
I talked to them about the fact that they were paying so much in taxes. And they were proud of the fact that they had no unemployment, they had health care for everybody, and they had education for everybody. And I know that, you know, we could do that, too, if we weren't spending our money in
I'm sorry, you cut out in the very beginning there. Could we hear what place you were talking about again?
This is Norway.
Okay, Norway. Yeah, it's definitely a very different culture there, and they look at things a lot differently. And I think it is something you can be proud of, is paying taxes, because once again, the IRS didn't sneak into your house at night and rob you clean. What the IRS did was they charged you for a service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. They have a different perspective. They're proud of taking care of other people, and we seem to have developed a culture that's and you know, we have these corporations and peoples that suck money out of the economy and cause it to go into recession, and they're thrilled with the fact that they're not paying any taxes. I mean, it's you know, pretty sick, really.
Yeah, and one thing to consider is that we in this country have actually had much higher tax rates on the higher income brackets. At one time, I don't necessarily support this. Off the top of my head, I can't quite remember what decade it was. It may have been the 60s or 50s. But it was a 90% income tax on the highest bracket. Now, that doesn't mean that all of your money is taxed at 90%. That means it just your top, say, $50,000 was 90%, and your lower $50,000 may have only been 80%. And, I mean, that, if I remember right, if it was the 50s or 60s, that was a decent time in America where we had a decent economy, and you have to look at it and say, maybe those higher tax rates worked. Maybe that didn't scare away all the businesses like the right often claims.
Right. Well, I've seen a chart recently that showed the tax rates from the 1800s up through the present day. And every time we dropped the tax rate on the wealthy down, the economy got worse. And we ended up in recession as it dropped down. And here we've dropped it down to the lowest rate ever. And we're wondering why we're in recession. Well, where's the money? The money is sitting in offshore bank accounts, and it's sucked up by people that don't need to do anything else because we don't tell them they have to, you know. And if we just required that they put the money into, you know, back into businesses, reinvest, create jobs, you know, or they lose the money, then that's, you know, that's a system that has worked. Now, I don't know if it can work with the globalization that we've got going on now. It might take a whole different plan or strategy.
Thank you very much for calling in. So,
yeah.
Thanks for calling in. Bye.
Yeah, it's a great program. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, I think it's interesting to say, though, about the countries like Norway and Sweden. They're smaller countries, you know. Population does have an interest in that as far as population. You know, the larger the population, the harder it is to get them to all believe in the same thing.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Amber from Santa Barbara.
Hi.
Okay, so I'm currently in college right now, and I thought it was interesting that you guys are talking about jobs that don't require a degree are decreasing in the United States, and everyone wants to get a job that has that requires a degree just because it's higher paying. And what people don't realize is that there are new jobs that are being created, and there has to be. That's what a lot of people in UC Santa Barbara are econ majors. A lot of my friends have been having problems with actually declaring their major because they're pre-econ. And everyone thinks that that's where the money is. So I just thought that was interesting. And also being able to pay off student debts, finding a job is also difficult just because you're a full-time student and you're taking classes all day. And then after you're done with classes, then you have to go to work. And it's usually a minimum paying job. And especially when you're not living in the dorms, you have to pay for rent. And it just, it's really difficult to be able to fill that gap.
Right, right. While we have you on the air, I'd like to ask you about your first comment about the jobs being created. What kind of jobs are those?
Just some new technology that's being created. Like, for example, there's globalization is increasing more and more. Like, I'm a linguistics major, so what I plan to do is I don't want to limit myself to a specific field. I want to be able to interact with other cultures and do other things.
Right.
I don't know any specific jobs that are being created, but I know that...
Just from the new connections and new technologies being created, everything is becoming more available. So,
right.
So these kinds of jobs are more, tech-based and some things that would require degrees? Or is this sort of technology creating jobs that would be applicable to people who don't have college degrees?
It's applicable probably more. It's more toward, geared towards people who have a degree. Just because there are jobs that don't require degrees are going overseas, and it's decreasing in the United States.
Do you think, what do you think about the language exchange jobs?
I think that is, it's really interesting for me personally. I just find that we learn from other cultures, and
based
that's
on language.
What America is like based on, is a whole bunch of different cultures that mix together, but we've kind of lost that. And you know, it's the American dream to make lots of money and be successful in life. But I think that it's important that we find our roots and kind of realize that there are other cultures that we can learn from.
Right, right. Well, thank you for your call.
So we've run out of time, unfortunately, and that's all for this month's edition of You Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Casey,
Eric,
Aron.
You Speaks Out is produced in cooperation with the Safe Schools Healthy Students Bronco Project, building resiliency opportunities for the North County. For more information about the Bronco program, please call Pat Sanborn at 459-5314. That's 459-5314. Or email at patsanborn@willitsunified.com. Visit the Bronco website at sshsbronco.org. You Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490, or through the website www.uspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. You Speaks Out is aired on the first Sunday of each month. Our next show will be in 5 weeks. That is August 5th at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in August.